Is that right? And so join me in welcoming Director Brooke Popp, who's going to give us an update on the Texas Water Development Board.
Well, howdy, y'all. Apologies in advance. I have a cold, so I sound disgusting, and I'm very sorry about that. I will try to keep the sniffles to a minimum. But thank y'all so much for having me at TAWC. Thanks, Rick, for your leadership. As Cameron so nicely pointed out, I am one of three full-time board members for the Texas Water Development Board. Per statute, we have an engineer, a financial expert, and an attorney. And I serve as the attorney role on the board, and therefore that makes me the least popular on the board, and no one ever wants me to come speak to them. I have been using that joke for almost 2 years now, and I keep thinking it's going to get old, but it doesn't because everyone hates attorneys. So attorneys and taxes, it's what Americans can actually, you know, agree upon, things that we don't like. So before I open up, I'd like to say a few things about TAWC. You know, the board would like to take credit for the first bit of funding that got the entity up and running in 2005, but you all know and we all know that it was really Senator Robert Duncan. He was a visionary, and he knew that the best conservation practices and research and data would be located right here, right in Lubbock, right in the High Plains, right at Texas Tech. And he really was the one who promoted getting that funding for this great organization. And I think it's a testament to how well run this is and how incredible the data and research has been, because it was technically only supposed to last for 8 years. But here we are in 2020, and we're still going strong. And I would like to say that the board saw such value in this incredible entity that in 2013, we allocated $3 to $4 million more. So that puts the total funding from the Texas Water Development Board in the state to $10 million. So well done. Obviously, the results have been incredible. But, you know, we have to thank Rick and all the staff for that as well. So let's talk about the mission of the Texas Water Development Board. We are here to provide leadership, information, education, support for planning, financial assistance, outreach for the conservation and responsible development of water for Texas. So basically, my focus as a board member is to ensure the state has the resources, funding, and planning to ensure that we have the water infrastructure to support our incredible growth. The state is growing by almost 1,000 citizens a day. Without infrastructure, we can't support this miracle, this incredible economic engine. We can't support our ag industry without proper utilization of water infrastructure. So that's where we come in. So this is my least, I have a love-hate relationship with this slide, because I think it definitely demonstrates a lot of what we do, but it's also, it's quite busy. But so there's three of us on the board, and we all have very different roles, but I think the basic tenet that we all talk about is better data makes better science makes better planning, and better planning makes better funding. So the Texas Water Development Board is a funding agency. We are not regulatory. We provide funding for all the water infrastructure and research that is important to the state. However, we have a huge science and data component to our agency. Without the data and the science, how much water do we have? Where is it? What's its quality? We can't properly plan, and without that proper planning, we don't know what we're funding. And these are taxpayer resources, so I want to know that every project that I vote on is the right project for that area. And without the data and the science, we can't do that. So I know y'all have probably had a million legislative updates by now, but I thought I would breeze through a few of the more water-impactful bills and the bills that were important to the Texas Water Development Board, especially the new flood initiatives that the agency has been tasked with. So, groundwater bills. It was an ASR session. ASR is aquifer storage and recovery, and you guys are all the experts, so I'm not going to go into the technicalities of that new innovative water strategy, but I will tell you that the leadership in Austin think it's an incredible and an innovative new water strategy. I agree with them. However, I will caveat it that it is it very much depends on the geology of the area. You don't want to put an ASR where all the water will just leak out or will be contaminated. That's pointless. Right now, we have three up-and-running state-funded ASRs, El Paso, Killeen, and San Antonio. Killeen, correct? Kerrville, thank you. I get my K's mixed up occasionally. And I have not been to Kerrville, but I've been to San Antonio and El Paso. And if you would like to go see what an incredible ASR looks like, go to El Paso and go to San Antonio. They've done a really great job with this strategy. I know College Station is working on one. I believe that we have 13 projects in the works right now. SB 720 by Larson really clears up the regulatory hurdles dealing with ASRs and allows reservoirs that lost water due to sedimentation to amend their water rights permits. So it speeds everything up. So if this is a strategy that a region really wants to utilize, it helps with the permitting, which is great because the bureaucracy in Austin is frightening sometimes. So kudos to a member that really wants to get rid of the red tape. And HB 721 is basically directing the Water Board to study the feasibility of ASR in different regions. And we received some money to do that, which was fantastic because usually we get told to do things without any funds given to us. So thank you, legislators. Let's see. And 1041, you all probably remember we had a slight pause on our brackish groundwater production zone studies. Was a funding pause that lasted for about 2 years, but our funding was restored, and this is an extension of the production zone study. We've completed 12 aquifer studies, and we've got 4 in the books. We are making great progress. These studies take quite a bit of time and quite a bit of resources, but we're doing well. So WAMS, again, it all goes back to that data. The water availability models desperately needed to be updated, and TCEQ is the ones that are tasked with that. But this year, because it was a water-heavy year, they got $2 million appropriations to update the WAMS for the Brazos, Neches, Red, and Rio Grande. And that data is integral for us, so we are excited to partner with them and see what that has, what they have for that. I think it's due to by December 2022. All right, regionalization. If y'all were at the Capitol all during session, that was the big tagline, is regionalization. How can the regions work together to help fund projects that help multiple regions, multiple cities? I think one of the biggest and best projects that I can point out that really addresses regionalization is the Integrated Pipeline that is a partnership between Tarrant Regional and the City of Dallas, which will, in the end, will pipe in water from almost 100 miles away to Tarrant. I mean, it's incredible. The pipeline is amazing. I was dared by Chairman Lake to go on a helicopter provided by Tarrant Regional to see the pipeline, and I'm terrified of heights. I did not want to go, but I can never turn down a dare. So I ended up on this tiny helicopter and got to see the pipeline, and I tell you, it's just absolutely incredible. So very proud of that project. The success of that project meant that the legislature really looked at these, and they would like our projects that are funded to actually help address a myriad of different communities. As the Leg does, they required us to create a council. So we have 16 regional water planning groups. We have an individual from each water planning group that will join this new interregional council, and they will discuss ways to better coordinate and present projects that will help a number of different communities. All right, let's go. Flood mitigation, SB 7. So SB 7 is relating to flood planning, mitigation, infrastructure projects, creates two funds, the FIF and the TURF. The stated goal is to encourage development in structural and non-structural flood mitigation. So why is this so important? Why did the legislature decide this was the session to address flood? Well, the state has been hit by very, very catastrophic rain events for the past 6 to 7 years. Obviously, everyone looks to Harvey. Harvey dumped 60 inches within, 48 hours on Houston? But not only that, we've had the Tax Day floods. We've had the Memorial Day floods. We've had the Wimberley floods. We've had the Onion Creek floods. We've had a lot of really catastrophic flooding in the state of Texas. And I'll tell you, this bill feels intensely personal to me because the Onion Creek floods hit by Austin. And my best friend, who worked for Governor Abbott, escaped with her 3-year-old toddler on her shoulders and water up to her hips. She was very close to losing her life and losing her son's life. She had no idea that that flood was about to wash into her house. That's an issue, obviously. And then another employee of Governor Abbott's lost her sister and her children to the Wimberley Day floods. It's unacceptable to lose life in the state of Texas to flooding. We need to do better. So, SB 7, it's time to address it. What can we do? How can we encourage development? What can we do to help mitigate flooding? It's always going to flood, but how can we make it less dangerous to property and to people? So, the legislature has asked us to fund things like structural mitigation, which include dams, levees, dikes, retention basins, stormwater management, flood walls, and then non-structural, which is more education, emergency preparedness, flood warning systems, buyouts, and construction of wetlands, which might help mitigate floods. We have Flash Flood Alley in Texas, but areas like Lubbock Flood, too, and areas in McAllen Flood, flooding is just a massive statewide issue. We live in a state that goes from catastrophic drought to catastrophic flood within months, and we have to be able to address both issues. And I think this is the legislature's way of doing that. So I will breeze through these because I only have 20 minutes and I talk a lot, and I apologize for that too. We have the FIF, and the FIF is the biggest part of the fund. We have rules out. I think that comment closed last week on the SB 7 rules. So I will caveat, I will be just sticking to the strict statutory interpretation of the bill and not commenting on our rules. That would be, I cannot do that. But we have the FIF and potential uses of the fund, and we are still working that out. Our loans for construction of flood projects and planning. Planning and design, obviously, takes a lot of money as well. And then grants. Part of the use for grants will be matching funds for federal flood programs, flood projects outside the metro areas. And as a quick update, at the December board meeting, we voted to allocate $7 million of FIF money to provide the local match requirements for 26 projects. This unlocked just over $60 million in federal flood grant money. And that is so incredible because these are 26 projects that are ready to go. They're shovel ready. They've been vetted by the feds and they're just waiting on their local match. So we've already managed to unlock $60 million worth of benefit to the state. And it's important to try to get those federal funds. I know there's always strings attached with partnering with the federal government. I know that far too well. But I don't want to leave money on the table. We deserve our fair share, too. So I think this was a really great way to address some of those mitigation needs. So additional requirements of the FIF. I call this you can't flood your neighbor slide. Regions need to work together if a project would have some sort of impact on their neighbor. Can't flood your neighbor. And you have to have public meetings because that is very important to the state. There are a few other accounts. We have our TURF, which is really run by TDEM. We have our floodplain management account, the Hurricane Harvey account, and this is TDEM's big account to provide money to finance strictly Harvey-related projects. They are working with the TWDB to have some sort of criteria, and we just approved that criteria for hazard mitigation projects at last meet's board meeting. So we are got a good start on this. Federal matching, basically we can only use these funds to meet matching requirements for federal projects. And I think, we are also allowed to use a share of this for federal ship channel improvement projects. I wonder what city managed to slip that in the bill. So it's Houston. Houston probably managed to slip that into the bill. All right, the floodplain implementation account. So this account will take center stage once the state floodplan is adopted in 2024. So the state floodplan will be like the state water plan. If you have a flood project you want funded by the state, it has to first be in the state floodplan, just like the state water plan and the SWIFT funds. So, of course, we have an advisory committee, and they met for the first time back in December. They encouraged GLO, TDEM, and TWDB to work together because we have a lot of benchmarks to meet, and we are working well together. So SB8, I will hurry this up. So this is related to state and regional flood planning. This is that state flood plan I was just talking about. So we are tasked with preparing and adopting a comprehensive state flood plan by 2024. Why is this such a heavy lift to the agency? I have 330 full-time employees. We are a very tiny agency compared to OAG, which has 4,000 employees, the controller's office, which has 3,000 employees. I have 330 highly educated and hardworking employees. But we have been tasked to come up with a state flood plan that will address a myriad of flood needs for the entire state. So why is that such a heavy lift for us? Well, the state water plan has been around for almost 60 years. We have had 60 years to get it done right, and even then, in 1997, we completely flipped the planning process on its head and changed the way we did things. We are expected to get the state flood plan done and done right by 2024. It is a brave new world for this agency. I know that we can rise to it, but I think that that is why we have been so aggressive in asking for stakeholder input, why we have been everywhere in the state saying, if you have ideas for flood mitigation, if you have opinions, and everyone has opinions, and I know this group has a lot of opinions, we want to hear them. Come to our workshops, comment on the rules, call the board members, but talk to us, because we can't do this in a vacuum. We need as much involvement from our regional water planning groups and all of our water associations to get this done right. We need everyone's expertise because we have to come up with this document by 2024, and it's a heavy load. So what's going to be included? We are going to... Oh, there we go. Evaluate existing flood infrastructures. We are supposed to have a ranked list of ongoing and proposed flood control projects. We will have an analysis of completed and ongoing proposed flood projects, an analysis of development of the 100-year floodplain. To me, that's the hardest part, is the floodplain and dealing with development and how do you deal with growth. And we need everyone's help on that. And come up with legislative recommendations. And these are all of our agency brothers and sisters that will help us with this process. All right. So regional flood planning. Regions must hold open meetings to allow for public comment. We have to have posting, and this is all the open government stuff. Y'all know this. You have organizations. And, of course, we have an advisory committee. Why is this? There we go. I'm sorry. Advisory committee, because all eyes are on us all the time. All right. Ag conservation grants. This area loves ag conservation grants. I can't give them out fast enough. I know you all know Cameron, and he is always the bearer of good news and money for the ag department for us. TAWC was funded with ag conservation grants. I believe the ag conservation grants actually came into being because of Robert Duncan trying to get funding for this very entity. So thank you to Robert Duncan, because they have done a ton of good too. So applicants for ag conservation grants: groundwater districts, university systems, other political subdivisions, participants, ag producers, crop consultants, equipment dealers, and nonprofit organizations. I've actually been in McAllen and seen a lot of the great research that the Valley has done using these funds, and I've been up here with Tech seeing the incredible research that's done. We get such a great bang for our buck with the ag conservation grants. And the fantastic news is the Ledge has seen what good research and products come out of these grants, and they have doubled the amount of funding that's available for this year. So instead of $600,000, which is not enough, they have given us $1.2 million for this year. And our focus is improving soil health and promoting irrigation conservation, obviously. The applications are due on February 19th. Be like a Valentine's Day present. So get your applications into Cameron. He's the man. He's ducking right now, I think. So, Patrick, how much time do I have? What? A minute. Okay. Of course. Okay. I will talk about, briefly, about our new TWDB initiatives on our SRFs. This is our trifecta. We have noticed that we have a lot of customers within our state revolving funds, or potential customers that are not necessarily creditworthy yet, or they have some asset management issues, or they have personnel issues, to be frank. And we have decided to target those communities with intense outreach to help them with CPA issues, to help them with asset management issues, and to help get them off the EPA's and TCEQ's violations list. So our asset management program for small systems, all of y'all know Kathleen Jackson. I'm in awe of her. She is so incredibly knowledgeable about systems. This is her brainchild, and this is really to help smaller communities pinpoint the best ways to take care of your assets. If you have a new infrastructure and you have no idea how to run it, and someone comes in and gives you 5 minutes on how to run it and leaves, and then you have employees that have no idea how to maintain, run, and fix your assets and your infrastructure, it's pointless. Why do that? This is a way to help maintain your infrastructure and have a great asset management planning program. So, trying to hurry up. All right. CPA to go. We have potential SRF customers that are located in small communities, and sometimes the one who does the books is, you know, the mayor's wife, and those books are not always the best. So this will help partner those small entities with a CPA firm that we have contracted with to help get their books in good shape. This will help design and implement internal controls, design procedures for preparing financial statements, compliance disclosure, all the things that really need to be in order before we can make a loan or a grant to an entity, because these are taxpayer dollars, so we can't just give out money without having the proper paperwork. And then my favorite new initiative, this is the Securing Safe Water Initiative. So the EPA has a strategic goal to reduce the number of systems with health violations. That sounds great, but we have an aging infrastructure problem in this country, and we have it in this state. In small communities, when the EPA rules keep changing, how do you keep up? How does your infrastructure keep up with the changing roles. It can't without significant investment or some sort of investment. And that's what we're running into. So as of April 2019, there were 261 public water systems that had unresolved health issues. We are targeting those 261 entities. We will be doing outreach and determining needs, trying to figure out how we can right the ship with their infrastructure and get them off that list, because everyone deserves clean water in the state of Texas. We made our first commitment to Commodore Cove Improvement District in December. They got almost $300,000, 100% principal forgiveness as a very small system. We're replacing tanks and water lines that didn't meet TCEQ standards, and we will have 260 public water systems after this. And I'm very proud of that, but we're coming for each and every one of those systems, and we're going to hopefully have a blank slate on lists. And, of course, this will be ongoing, but I'm very proud of it. So I think it's an innovative way to address aging infrastructure, and, you know, small entities deserve to have clean water, too. All right, quick program update, and I swear I'm done because I know y'all are hungry. All right, SWIFT update. We had our latest bond sale. We did almost $1 billion in financing new state water plan projects. That brings us to $9 billion in funding since the SWIFT started in 2015. That's $9 billion. That's an incredible amount of funding for an agency that has 330 FTEs to push out to groups. I think my favorite stat is it brings the total savings to over $1 billion for borrowers. Borrowers have saved $1 billion by coming to us instead of going to the open market for financing. There's no better deal on the open market than coming to TWDB for financing. The program's doing exactly what the legislature has tasked us to do. Very proud of that. And flood, we just closed on our FIF rules. We have a special board meeting on January 30th where we will be taking any sort of oral comments on the FIF, as well as taking any oral comments on SB 8. That comment period closes February 3rd. We will adopt the rules for SB 8 in March, SB 7 in February. Again, go read the rules. Look at what we have designed for SB 7 and SB 8. We need everyone's input. That's what we got. Any questions? I know I'm standing in between y'all and lunch, so, and a cookie. No? All right. Y'all have a good lunch. Thank you.